Welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, coming at you across the web with the most exciting interviews and the best in Ohio State football and basketball coverage. Here's your host, Joe Dexter.
What is up, Buckeye Nation? Hello and welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. It's good to be back. We're not rattled out, trust me. We're just getting started. It's Hate Week as Wisconsin comes to town to take on Ohio State. 8 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. There's no team that we hate more than the stinking Badgers. Well, maybe the Wolverines. But that's an argument for a different day. Today we break down our opponent on Saturday. The Badgers, a team to be reckoned with, despite being 3-1 and losing to an Arizona State squad that got pounded by Stanford. This is still a tough squad and the first true test for Ohio State this season. One thing is clear, there's no test here at the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour because we've passed with flying colors with our guests this week. Here at the Buckeye Battle Cry, we bring you the best and the most certified, including signed, sealed, delivered, the most certified Badger hater on our website. Eric's going to join us coming up in just a bit to break down the Ohio State side of things. We'll talk about this rivalry. Is it a rivalry? We'll break down some of the things in college football as well as we get ready for a big game. And when it comes to big names and big games, there's nobody that does it all like Andy Coppins, the lead editor of the Big Ten blog on Bleacher Report and the lead editor at MadTownBadgers.com. Yeah, I consider him a friend and he's a Badger fan. Something's wrong with me. There's no doubt about it. It's a big game and a big day Saturday, Wisconsin and Ohio State at the Horseshoe. And we've got it all covered at the BuckeyeBattleCry.com. We like to bring you the most in-depth reports. So when this came across the Radio Hour desk, we knew we had to bring it to you. This week, we bring you the insight of a Wisconsin fan daydreaming. One thing to note, it's a hard-curd life in the Cheese State.
So today, I'd like to talk about Wisconsin because I feel very strongly about my hatred towards this state.
This looks like the last snap of the ball game.
He's going to try to spike it here.
And he did. But the clock time ran out, didn't it?
I have lived here for 8 years and... First of all, I have not had only 4 friends, and most of them used me. And when I try to make friends with people, they usually exchange numbers with you, and then they sit up there and don't return your calls. And it's not like you're calling them all the time. You just call every once in a while. And then they make excuses why they can't hang out. Like one excuse that my fiance heard was, "Oh, I'm too tired. I have to go to sleep."
I'm not sure that he got it off.
Arizona State.
What?
Ooh. No, we should be going.
Talk about it.
No, we should be going.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay. So controversial ending in this one. I should probably set him up.
Set him up.
You see a stop, he throws the football, and he's just going to run the middle of the field and put the ball down at the 15-yard line. It was interesting. He just put the ball down. He didn't take a knee. He just put the ball on the ground. He's saying he gave himself up, so it's down. But there's 4 seconds left. The clock's running. The clock's still going. The official didn't restart the ball, and the game's over.
And so the people here are not friendly. They're the exact opposite. They're rude and mean, and they're just not nice. Then, if anybody does not like sports, you do not want to move to this state. All these people care about here is football, and I'm getting so sick and tired of that. And 3, they don't have that much to do here, right? They do have the Dells. But after you've done it 5 times, 6 times, it gets boring. Because all they have there is a lot of big water park resorts and little things like laser tag and zip line tours and bowling. That's pretty much what they have, and it gets boring after a while.
Fryer. Keeper. Touchdown. Wisconsin was so out of whack defensively. I thought they were going to use their last timeout because they were totally confused
and Terrell Pryor snapped the football, and they were not ready to play defense.
I'm just getting so sick of this state. I've had it with this state, and I'm moving. F Wisconsin, forget this state. I'm getting the heck out of here fast.
Raul Hernandez?
Yeah.
Got the delivery here for your next show?
Oh, great. What you got?
Well, let's see. I got one aardvark, one flamingo, four porcupines, two armadillos, three badgers.
Badgers? Badgers? We don't need no stinking badgers!
No stinking badgers. Glad to bring you that virtual report just into the radio desk here at the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Oh, man, I read the script wrong. That's not a daydream from a Wisconsin fan. It's a nightmare. Every single day as a Wisconsin fan must be a nightmare. When we come back, we got the best preview around of Saturday's game against those stinking Badgers and Ohio State. A certified Badger hater is on his way. Glad to have Eric back on the show as we'll break down the Ohio State perspective of things. Andy Coppins, the lead editor at MadTownBadgers.com and Bleacher Report's Big Ten blog, will join us later in the program to talk about those Badgers and Wisconsin's chances on Saturday. When we come back, the Doctor of Hate, Eric, will join us to break down Ohio State and the latest in NCAA violations, allegations, communications, and whatever else they're up to. More to come on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. BuckeyeRoom.com is your number one stop for Ohio State swag. From men's and ladies' apparel to hats, autographed apparel, and the best in scarlet and gray game day jerseys. BuckeyeRoom.com, featuring the deal of the day right on our homepage at thebuckeyebattlecry.com. BuckeyeRoom.com, the best place for Buckeye hats, clothing, and apparel.
The show where scarlet and gray is the only game in town. Welcome back to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour.
We now welcome in a friend, a guy we haven't talked to in a little bit, Eric at the BBC. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me back.
I don't think you're doing as well as Penn State after yesterday's announcements.
Oh my, Penn State, really? Jeez. So, okay, I don't even fully get what's going on here. You know, Penn State somehow magically manages to get the NCAA to agree to give them back scholarships. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you look at it. In Fulman, ESPN yesterday, their headline was NCAA slowly returns scholarships to Penn State. It's not slowly. I mean, they'll be at a cap of 65 scholarships in 2014. They're going to get five back instead of 15 per year. They're going to get 20 per year. They'll have 75 scholarships in 2014, 80 in 2015, and then back to full allotment of 85 in 2016. So it looks like the NCAA here saying that everything's fine and dandy. We made this harsh ruling not too long ago, but everything's okay now. Let's be a little bit lighter than what we were.
Yeah, we made this super harsh ruling, but, you know, we're going to go back on that because, you know, whatever. Look, I get why the NCAA is doing it. In my own personal opinion, the NCAA shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place. Yeah, that's a crazy statement that I'm sure a whole bunch of people aren't going to agree with in any context. In fact, I just had a debate about that with Jason from the BBC just yesterday on Twitter. You know, the whole Sandusky thing was a criminal matter from the get-go, right? Yes, Joe Paterno possibly may have covered it up. I tend to think that he didn't actually cover anything up. He went and talked to his bosses about it, and his bosses were the ones who covered it up. But covering up a criminal crime is also criminal, right? There's nothing in the NCAA bylaws that say crimes are also NCAA violations. This isn't a violation of NCAA rules. Therefore, the NCAA shouldn't be involved, period, right? I don't care what you think. Yeah, child molestation, child rape, terrible. It's a heinous crime. They deserve to have the book thrown at them. But what the NCAA did is vigilante justice, going after them despite the fact that they have, that the NCAA has absolutely nothing to do with it. Okay? So that's step one, that the NCAA shouldn't have been involved in the first place. But they got involved and they set a penalty. Now they turn around and they go, oh, well, you know, we shouldn't have been as harsh as we were. Can you say inconsistent? Stick to your fucking ruling, right? Stick to the ruling. You made a decision, stick to it.
The one thing that I noticed right away is they're not giving back any of that $60 million they owed to the NCAA.
No, of course not, because, you know, the NCAA got some money out of them, so why give it back?
I think that's what hurts so much about it, too, as a fan, is it's not something that they should have judged on in the first place, but they're the quote-unquote number one ruling body, the big watchdog. They make a big decision, so if in a criminal matter, if the decision was made, if somebody was found guilty, you're not going back on what the punishment was, but the NCAA here, again, being ignorant in doing that, and I don't know how that sits for NCAA President Mark Emmert and where he stands and where fans stand when it comes to the NCAA, but it just, to me, that's why it's so screwed up. I tend to agree where you are with the fact that they shouldn't have been dealing with this in the first place. It's none of the NCAA's business from their standpoint, in my opinion, but yet they stand in here. They're supposedly don't have enough time for Johnny Manziel issues or any of these issues that are popping up. Miami has waited for 18,000 years to find out what their ruling is going to be, and yet they've continued to plot what they deem is right, whether it was right the first time or not to them, and continue to make changes.
I mean, at this point, who the hell cares? What the hell does it matter what they decide about Miami? What the hell does it matter what they decided about Oregon? At this point, the NCAA could decide anything they want and then go back on it 2 years from now. And don't get me wrong, I'm perfectly happy for Penn State. I am glad that they're going to get scholarships back. I am glad that they're going to stop punishing players that had nothing to do with this crime. That was my big issue with the OSU thing, was that players who had nothing to do with the violations committed were the ones getting punished for it. How many of the players missed out on the bowl game? Not many, if any at all. I can't remember how many of the original Tat 5 were still around for the 2012 season. Maybe one. That I said it before and I'll say it again, that was a miscarriage of justice. And it happened again to Penn State, right? That was a miscarriage of justice. And it's in its worst form, it wasn't even justice. It's vigilante justice. You know, so I'm truly happy for Penn State. I'm truly happy for the Penn State fans, and I'm really happy for the Penn State team. You know, you get to move on from this. That's great. But there's no point looking at any other NCAA violations case. What the fuck does it matter? It's completely irrelevant. The NCAA might as well dance a jig for all I care, because their decision-making has been demonstrated to be inconsistent, childish, and useless.
Another thing that's interesting about it, you get the political side of things. Former U.S. Senator George Mitchell, who also ran the steroid thing in Major League Baseball for Bud Selig, said today, Penn State has consistently demonstrated a strong commitment to fulfilling the requirements of the Athletics Integrity Commitment, and the amount of time and energy and resources devoted to these efforts have been notable. But when you make a step back on something like this and you're trying to send a message, what is to keep Penn State from continuing doing the things that they've done at this point if they know that some of the regulations that were against them have been limited now?
I mean, what does that statement even mean, that they've maintained their commitment to whatever he said, right? It's a whole bunch of political jargon that has no worthwhile meaning to it. I mean, let's think about it from the side of, say, USC or Ohio State. Did USC not make a commitment to improving their behavior and their compliance? Did OSU, already the largest compliance office in the nation, not hire a whole bunch more compliance officers, not change their compliance rules to better facilitate following NCAA rules in the future? Is this not the same thing? How is this any different than what Penn State is doing? Penn State has severed all ties with Sandusky, who is now in prison. Okay. I don't get the connection here. I don't get why suddenly Penn State deserves leniency where no one else does, right? I mean, it's hypocritical. I mean, on the one hand, you have a school that's acting in a certain way and gets leniency for it. And on the other, you have two other schools who acted in very similar ways, reacted quickly and strongly, and they get no leniency, right? And the difference in the crimes is on Penn State's side, the crimes had nothing to do with the student athletes at all. Whereas the one on the other side is it has nothing to do with the student athletes who are still there. That's the only difference.
When you look down the road, and I hate to bring it up because I just don't see anything happening from this, but is this the opportunity where the NCAA swishy-swashy ruling could actually bite them in the butt?
I wouldn't be at all surprised if the NCAA is already, for all intents and purposes, done for, and this makes no difference. I mean, we've been talking for a long time about the major conferences splitting off and forming their own quote-unquote semi-pro league to get away from the NCAA's rules to avoid the whole amateurism thing, right? Amateurism seems to work fine for D2 schools, but it doesn't work fine for D1A schools or FBS schools or whatever the hell you want to call them. So I think the NCAA, in terms of Division I-A football, is already done for. This might just be one of the steps towards the final nail in the coffin, as it were, that the NCAA is losing their grip on it, and we're just seeing sort of the outer parts of it losing its grip.
Well, if there wasn't enough anger in the air from the NCAA and the sanctions, Eric, it's Badger Week.
Hate Week.
Oh, if there's two things I hate in the world, it's two rodents, Wolverines and Badgers.
No, I don't even hate the Wolverines. I just hate the Badgers.
Hey.
I respect Michigan. Yeah, they are our rival, and they are vile and disgusting, but they are not Wisconsin. Wisconsin gets no respect from me at all. I don't respect them at all. I don't respect their fans. I don't respect their band. I don't respect their team. They are scumbags in every context.
Oh, man. You're ready for the game, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I want to destroy their soul. I just want to bone-crushingly ruin them. You know, that's it. I cannot stand that school at all. I can't stand its graduates. I can't stand anyone associated with it.
Well, we were talking to Andy Coppins earlier, and we'll play that interview later with MadTownBadgers.com, and he was talking about how big this rivalry is. It is a big rivalry the last few years, but in the series, Ohio State leads 55-18.
Nice.
So
that's not good enough.
That's not good enough for me to be a top rivalry. It's still, to me, when you pencil it in, just because you and I can share the hatred, because I hate Wisconsin more than I hate Michigan, too, but it's not necessarily all time where the rivalry is, but the last few years have been a really good rivalry between two schools that fans really don't necessarily enjoy being in each other's company.
Well, first off, I want to point out that calling it a rivalry is incorrect. This isn't a rivalry. This is two teams that just hate each other. A rivalry requires respect, and there ain't no respect here, right? We may talk crap about Michigan, but we still respect them. There ain't no respect for Wisconsin, and I don't see any respect coming back. So no love lost there. But over the last couple of years, going back to 2006, when we didn't play, OSU was 5-1 against Wisconsin. The only loss being in 2010.
What'd you take from Urban Meyer this week saying that Wisconsin's the king of the Big Ten?
It's a true statement. Wisconsin has won the Big Ten championship the last 3 years and has gone to the Rose Bowl. Right? Well, okay, they didn't win the Big Ten Championship in 2010. We did, but that's a side note since that got vacated. So for all intents and purposes, Wisconsin has three with an asterisk Big Ten Championships. Right? Until such time that someone else wins the Big Ten Championship, they are the top. They deserve it. They hold the hardware. It's that simple. So I don't have any problem with Urban Meyer saying that. It's an entirely factual statement. And if it helps the team focus a little better on the job at hand, great. Great. Right? We need to just spank these guys so hard that they're never going to forget it. That's what I hope goes on here.
I was thinking about it this week. And the last couple weeks I've been thinking about Wisconsin because they're the first Big Ten game. And how much I hate them and all that's going to be encompassed in this game Saturday at 8 o'clock. And I was thinking, like, something's missing. I couldn't put my finger on it, and then I realized Brett Bielema is not the coach of Wisconsin. And that was half the fun, half the battle of with Wisconsin fans is just making fun of that guy. And that's going to be missed, but and when you got a guy like Gary Anderson, there's not really much to poke fun at. That takes away from it, but...
I can't hate Gary Anderson quite like I hated Burt Bielema. I mean, Gary, just looking at some of the quotes from Gary Anderson's interview, he's actually reasonably intelligent. He knows what he's talking about. And he's a former Urban Meyer assistant. So there's a connection there. I can't bring myself to hate him like I hate Bo Ryan and like I hate Burt Bielema. So I don't know what that's going to do to how much I despise this school. Probably not a lot, because I despise it for a lot more reasons than just athletics, but that's a whole nother story.
Wisconsin 3-1 on the season. Their loss to Arizona State, a team that really got blown out on defense against Stanford last week. And everybody, the thing that's so funny about this rivalry I agree with you, it's not necessarily a rivalry, but the thing that's interesting about it from fans' perspectives, Wisconsin fans are chirping, "You guys haven't played anybody. How do you know your defense will stand up?" Wisconsin, who have you played?
Yeah, we're going to have an interview tomorrow with the Madtown Badgers, a Q&A. We sent them a few questions and got some answers back, and they gave us crap for our poor schedule. We asked them about their week schedule, and they gave us crap for our schedule. Yeah, you guys lost to what seems to be a not-so-great Arizona State team, and you lost to them because you couldn't pull your head out of your ass enough to take a knee. That would have been the first thing to save your butts, to not talk to the ref for 12 seconds. Yeah, or however long it was. I mean, it seemed like 15 minutes, but it was like 12 seconds. Trying to make certain he knew that you were down and you were giving yourself up. And you know, God forbid, all you had to do was get your fracking field goal unit and kick a fucking field goal. But you couldn't do it. And you want to look at us and say that, you know, we don't have a shot in this game? I'm sorry. Seems to me like I can expect your quarterback to blow it severely.
That's the one thing I asked Andy, and his answer we will get to a little bit later, but I asked him, is Joel Stave the guy that you can have on the field, 75 yards to go, tie ball game with 2 minutes left? And he said, surprisingly, yes. But after watching after watching that, it's like, man, that was a Michigan State-like moment.
Oh, that was a Sparty no if ever I've seen one. You know, Stave may be the guy to lead you down the field for a touchdown with 2 minutes left and, you know, have to go 75 yards, but if you're down a field goal or less and you need to kick a field goal, Stave's not the guy you want behind center, clearly, because he's going to screw you over.
If Coach Anderson has all three timeouts with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, we know why.
Yeah.
But when you talk about Wisconsin, and we'll break them down a little bit later, but when you talk about them, the running game is really good. James White, Melvin Gordon, they've got a three-headed monster per se. But let's take a look at it from the Ohio State perspective. Defensively, I don't think it's something that this coaching staff is afraid of necessarily.
Not necessarily. I'm a little worried about it. You know, they've got an excellent running game. They've always had an excellent running game, running behind those corn-fed farm boy offensive linemen, they're going to gain yardage on us. There's no question about it. You know, going into this game, just expect that their running game is going to have success. That's it. We got a young defensive line. We've got young linebackers, especially the linebackers, worry me a bit. You know, the defensive line will probably hold their own against Wisconsin's offensive line, but the linebackers outside of Shazier have been a little shaky this year. So it's a little bit worrisome. You know, what are they going to be able to do against Wisconsin's offense? Are they going to be able to stop the run consistently at 3 or 4 yards gained or less? Or are they going to be gashed for 6 to 8 yards, which Wisconsin's offense is averaging right now? Yes, against total patsies, but that is their average. So it'll be interesting to see how Wisconsin's offense responds. And don't get your hopes up if the first drive goes really poorly for Wisconsin. OSU has demonstrated the last 4 games that they will come out the first series on defense and tackle extremely well. They will just light out perfect form tackling. You've never seen the like. And then the very next possession, the very next series, they can't tackle anymore. It's arm tackle left, arm tackle right, can't bring anyone down. Atrocious. It's atrocious tackling. I don't know why this is happening. And this, I said this on the for one of the Madtown Badger questions that we sent to them. You know, it could just be that we start putting in some of the second stringers to relieve some of the starters, and the second stringers aren't tackling well. It could also be that we get overconfident, and so we start hamming it up a little bit, going for the hard tackle rather than the fundamental tackle. I don't know. But that's definitely something that worries me a little bit, so keep your eyes open for it.
Ken's going to touch on it on the preview tomorrow. When you look at these two teams, the stats are very similar, but like you already alluded to, it's kind of a throw those stats out. We really don't know what we're going to see from either team. Wisconsin played a really, really bad Purdue team in Big Ten play to open up last week, but you really don't know what you're going to get from either team in Big Ten play.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, this is sort of the worst starting game for both teams, right? You'd really like to start Big Ten play a couple of games, and Wisconsin got lucky. They got Purdue to start their Big Ten play. But let's be honest, Purdue, Akron, they're similar, which probably means that Michigan would lose to Purdue, but that's okay. You know, so we get each other far too early in the season. It would be much better to get to face each other in October rather than late September. You know, you want to ease your way into the conference schedule, sort of figure your way through some of the tackling and running game and things like that. OSU hasn't faced an actual honest-to-God running game, right? Cal's running back didn't get the ball very much, partly because we blew him out of the water in the first 6 minutes. I mean, freaking 21 touchdowns and 190 yards in 6 minutes of play. They basically abandoned the running game straight away, even though their running back gashed us the previous season for lots of yardage. You know, they've gone to this new air raid attack, and we sort of forced them to go deeper into throwing the ball, but it's neither here nor there. We haven't faced a big name running back. Now we face three. So this is definitely a new experience for both teams. I definitely agree with the throw away the stats. The stats are meaningless going into this game. We're just going to have to see what happens.
The thing that's interesting to me, and one of the key points will be for both teams, is the defensive line. And we bring in a very young defensive line. Everybody gone from the starting group last year. You look at this squad up front, and despite what the numbers say, you still have to have a little bit of fear because of their youngness on the field, but they've shown a lot of ability to make big plays.
Yeah, they sure have. You know, against Cal, I was very impressed by the fact that I saw us go into three down lineman sets. You know, OSU sort of likes to start out in a 4-2-5 or a 4-3, you know, a proper 4-3 set. But towards the end of the game, they were going into their 3-3-5 or their 3-2-6 sets. And with three down linemen rushing, no linebackers, we were still getting pressure on Cal's quarterback. Okay, maybe Cal's offensive line is terrible, but three down linemen should not get as much pressure on a quarterback against a top-tier conference team. Cal could not stop our three-man rush. We got sacks. We got pressure. We hurried the Cal quarterback repeatedly. That was an excellent showing. So this defensive line has a lot of talent and a lot of promise ahead of them, and they have grown the last few games. This will be a big test for them.
Joey Bosa, man, that guy gets to the quarterback and gets and creates pressure.
Yes, he does. He gets to the quarterback in a hurry. He's going to be a good one.
The defensive line will be key, but so will the secondary and linebackers. We saw what Ryan Shazier can do against Wisconsin last year in a close ball game, 21-14 win for Ohio State in overtime. This guy is so imperative to this defense, and we haven't even seen how imperative he is yet this year because of the schedule. I think this is where you start to talk about Ryan Shazier and the national media does as a top player defensively in the country.
Yeah, this could be the first game, if not the game, that sort of cements him near the top of the best linebacker of in the country discussion. Shazier has always shined in big games and in big moments. It'll be interesting to see if that continues. But you cannot stop him in any way. Oh, you know, OSU's offensive linemen were constantly talking about how they could not stop Shazier during the offseason, during the practices leading into the season. You know, he's fast. He's hard-nosed. He'll hit you just as hard as he can. And he's the leader of the defense. He's a very vocal leader from what we understand. So he's going to be a big component to what this defense wants to do. He's going to be a big component to making the defense work, and he's good at it, right? We have seen him for the last season and a third now be a big name part of this defense. Yes, the last four games we haven't seen him really shine, but I think in Big Ten play he's really going to show up, both on the stat sheet and in his vocal leadership on the field.
The one thing that sticks out to me about this game, and you don't look at the stats much like we were talking about, but one thing that stuck out to me, both teams are big play offenses. Wisconsin number one in the conference after four games with 8 yards per play. This is a game where the secondary could be huge because this game could be dealt by the simple decision of a big play making a big factor in the ending score.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, OSU-Wisconsin, well, I shouldn't say unfortunate. It's fortunate OSU-Wisconsin has come down to big plays repeatedly because OSU-Wisconsin, going back to 2003, has been an excellent series. That's part of the reason why it sort of built a rivalry, because it's such a tough game for both teams year in and year out. Going back to 2003, Chris Gamble biting on the play fake and getting burned for a long touchdown pass. Just last year, Shazier punching the ball out on the goal line to preserve the lead, or to preserve the tie, if I recall correctly. So big plays are a big part of this, and to have both teams sort of leading the conference in big plays sort of leads into another possibility for that. And yes, the secondary is going to play a major role, both in the run stopping and in the passing game. Now, I suspect Wisconsin's probably not going to be looking for too many home run strikes from their receivers. They never do. Their tight ends have always played a bigger role. They continue to play a big role. You know, Gary Anderson hasn't really changed the Wisconsin offense very much. So you're not going to see a big difference from what you saw under Burt Bielema. Expect a lot of tight end slants. Expect a lot of just, you know, sort of short yardage passes. You're not going to see a lot of downfield threats, but do expect that at some point one of the Wisconsin running backs is going to break a big one up the middle, because that's what Wisconsin does.
When you look at our offense, this has been one of the more interesting few weeks as a Buckeye fan, and watching it from taking a back seat and not really talking about it, the whole Kenny Guyton, Braxton Miller topic. And I was on Andy Coppin's show on the MadTownBadgers.com this week, and he asked me about it, and I was honest about it. I love Kenny Guyton, but is this really an issue, or is this just something to create drama?
Oh, it's just fans creating drama. You know, is Kenny Guyton a great quarterback? Yes. Could he start at 95% of the schools in the country today? Yes, absolutely. The only ones that might be a question would be Alabama and Texas A&M, right? Michigan State fans are begging me for Guyton. The Madtown Badgers asked us if we still wanted Braxton Miller if we were using Guyton, and Ken told them flat out they're not allowed having Guyton either. Guyton is a great quarterback. He is a fantastic quarterback. He distributes the ball well. He has good wheels. He makes smart decisions. He runs the zone read well. He runs Urban Meyer's offense well, and he understands the offense well. That makes him a great quarterback. However, he is an explosive runner. He's a good runner. He's not an explosive runner. He's not the kind of runner that's just going to get out into the open field and run away from everyone. That's one of the things that Braxton Miller brings to this team. When he runs the football, watch out, because amazing things are going to happen, most likely. The other thing that Braxton Miller brings is a much longer arm, right? Braxton Miller throws a deeper pass than Kenny Guyton does, and Braxton Miller, supposedly, we've only seen four quarters plus a possession from Braxton Miller, but Braxton Miller's passing has generally been more accurate this season from what we've seen than Kenny Guyton. Now that's sort of splitting hairs. Guyton is a pretty accurate quarterback, but I've seen him loft a few passes to receivers that had a step on their coverage. And I've seen him miss a few deep passes. So it's fairly clear to me that Braxton is the number one option for this offense. Kenny Guyton is a fantastic 1B, right? I would not cry if Braxton Miller decided to, you know, leave today. Well, I might cry a little bit, but, you know, we certainly wouldn't be hurting. Our offense would run just fine under Kenny Guyton, but it runs much better under Braxton Miller.
It definitely does, and there's been a lot of talk this week about the big argument for those that are for Kenny Guyton starting over Braxton Miller, which to me still sounds ridiculous. Anyways, their discussion is, well, the offense flows so much better through Guyton. He does a better job with the offense. I don't think people understand that Braxton Miller is kind of given a green light to run the offense the way he feels comfortable. There are plays that are set up where Braxton Miller makes decisions, and that's why it's not as, quote-unquote, flows such as good. My opinion.
That was very awkward wording, but sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
No, I got you. Yes, the offense does flow better under Guyton. Part of that is because Guyton has a better understanding of the offense, a better understanding of what needs to happen, and does a much better job of distributing the ball because he knows he's not as effective of a runner. So he's looking more to the playmakers than Braxton Miller, who is having to also consider himself as an option. So yes, there's going to be a little bit of a hesitation in what Braxton Miller does because he has to make the decision of whether to take it himself or go with it. You know, this season we've actually seen him checking down in his passes a lot more, and that's actually hurting us a little bit, that he's not just taking to his feet nearly as much as he used to. But I can't complain about that so much because I've been wanting Buckeye quarterbacks to check down in their progressions for, you know, since the beginning of Terrell Pryor's career. Which, by the way, it was really nice to see Terrell Pryor checking down against Denver last night, or two nights ago. you know, it's amazing what a non-video coordinator quarterback coach can do for you. Anyway, both quarterbacks give us a great chance to win. I just think that Braxton, as a weapon and as a quarterback, gives us a slightly better chance to win. He adds that extra dimension that teams have to prepare for in a way that they don't necessarily have to prepare for Kenny Guyton, despite what Gary Anderson said about preparing for us the same way, regardless of who's under center. You don't prepare for Kenny Guyton the same way you prepare for Braxton Miller. You prepare for Kenny Guyton to distribute the ball and possibly be a running threat. You prepare for Braxton Miller to distribute the ball and certainly be a running threat. You have to leave someone home to spy on Braxton Miller. If you don't, he will burn you for it.
I think that's the difference, too. Coach Anderson can game plan against a Kenny Guyton, and that's nothing against Guyton. He's got great abilities. There are some things from Braxton Miller you just can't game plan for.
That's right. We're not saying that one quarterback is phenomenally better than the other. What we're saying is one quarterback gives a slightly better advantage, and just in terms of the style of the quarterback. Kenny Guyton is not the same style quarterback as Braxton Miller. Yes, they're both dual threat, running mobile quarterbacks that can throw the ball. But one of them is a little bit better at being mobile than the other, and that changes some of the style of how they play the game.
The running game will be huge on Saturday against Wisconsin. Last year, we saw Carlos Hyde with a solid game, 15 carries, 87 yards, 2 touchdowns. We saw him a little bit last week, just a handful of carries. Where do we see him this week?
Who, Carlos Hyde?
Yeah.
Okay, we're certainly going to see him in short yardage situations. Carlos Hyde is a big bruising back. He's still coming back from his suspension, and the coaches are going to be hesitant to take touches away from Jordan Hall, who has excelled this season as a running back, and they're going to hesitate to take touches away from Dontre Wilson, who has done a pretty fair job as, you know, a freshman running back coming in and sort of being a change of pace back, giving us a little bit of a faster look. We're probably going to see Dontre Wilson shift over to more of the H-back look now that we have Carlos Hyde back. We're going to see him as a receiver a little bit more, as a screenplay option. So it'll sort of be interesting to see what the coaches want to do with Carlos Hyde. You know, we only saw him a handful of times against Florida A&M because, you know, the coaches just wanted to give everyone a few touches and then get to the second strings and third stringers as fast as they possibly could. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, great, great day, 160 yards, 2 touchdowns against Florida A&M, all in the second half. I mean, it was phenomenal showing behind the second and third string offensive lines. So it's really hard to say what the coaches want to do with Carlos Hyde, given the limited amount we saw him. But I would certainly expect him to be short yardage back. I would certainly expect him to see a possession or two, but I also expect that Jordan Hall is going to get the majority of the carries.
Call me crazy. I've been thinking about this last week after watching Louisiana Monroe a little bit this year with a two-quarterback system and using two quarterbacks at one time on the field, which was really cool to see. I don't expect that from Ohio State, but coming back against Wisconsin, could we see some drives where Kenny Guyton is on the field just to give Braxton Miller not a spell, but just a chance to be on the bench to take a step back from what he just performed, or to see Guyton take a little bit over? I was just wondering if we could see that or not. I don't think it's possible.
Are you talking about two QBs on the field at the same time, or are you talking about Guyton spelling Miller?
Well, I know we're not going to see two quarterbacks at the same time.
Are you sure about that?
No, I've sold myself that we're not going to see that. If we do, like, the Tostitos are going to be flying. It's something that is really cool to see, and Louisiana Monroe did a really cool job with it against Baylor. But I don't know if Kenny Guyton spells Braxton Miller at all in this game, but it definitely seems like it could be a possibility at points.
Guyton has earned his playing time. He will probably spell Braxton Miller here and there, now and then. Now, the problem with doing that is, so you got to be really careful whenever you start switching quarterbacks in and out. because every quarterback has their own tempo and their own way of running the offense. And generally, bringing in a quarterback, you know, switching your quarterbacks tends to lead to more false starts, tends to lead to more confusion, and tends to hamper your offense a little bit. OSU did this back in 97 when we ran both Joe Germain and I'm going to forget his name and it's going to drive me nuts, Stanley Jackson. Germain and Stanley Jackson. It worked then because Stanley Jackson was more of a mobile quarterback and Joe Germain was more of a throwing quarterback. And, you know, we sort of played around with it a little bit and we made it work. The problem with the Braxton Miller-Kenny Guyton thing, you know, I don't know how easy it's going to be for the team to just switch gears back and forth repeatedly. We might see it. It might be interesting to see, but we might not see a lot of it until we get to a little bit softer competition, maybe when we see Purdue. Yes, I just called Purdue soft, which means they're gonna give us trouble again. So, you know, that's a possibility. You know, it's really hard to say. You know, we're speculating wildly given a very limited data set. As far as I'm concerned, what we've seen is Kenny Guyton has proved he can play, and Braxton Miller has been held back due to the MCL. Mostly the coach is just saying, okay, we want to make sure you're healthy. But we haven't seen both quarterbacks be officially healthy for a single game, and especially a game of this magnitude. I don't know if the coaches want to risk it. We're just going to have to wait and see. You know, we have nothing to base it on, but there is something nice about all this. Wisconsin probably has to plan for it. If we don't know, they certainly don't know.
And we have to plan for their quarterback placing the football on the ground.
You know, you really don't plan for that. You just watch it happen and laugh.
Well, before we let you go, final predictions, what you think is going to happen on Saturday?
Man, it could go any of 100 different ways. Honestly, I think Ohio State is the better team, and this isn't homerism talking. This is honest analysis. I think OSU has the most weapons. I think they're the most dynamic. They're the least one-dimensional team of the two offensively. Wisconsin's going to get there. They're going to get their yardage. All three of the running backs are going to do a great job. They're probably going to have a 100-yard rusher. I'm not going to say which one it is because I don't have any idea. And you know that the OSU defense is going to struggle a bit. Ultimately, OSU will win probably by 3 points, maybe by 7. So single score victory here. And it's going to come down to the wire, but given OSU's experience in these situations, given the fact that OSU is at home, they'll probably take the win.
Well, either way, make sure you're safe out there. Don't end up in jail. Don't do anything crazy if the Badgers win or lose. I don't want to have to bail you out from 8 hours away.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. You know, I got a PhD I want to finish someday, so... You know, I'm not going to go that crazy.
Okay, good.
But I can't promise there won't be some exuberant drinking if we win or some truly low-level drinking if we lose. And I can't say anything to that. We'll have to see.
Just stay away from the East Lansing stereotype. Don't burn any couches, okay?
No promises.
Eric joining us here to break down Ohio State as we get ready for Wisconsin. Always good to talk to you, bud.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our certified Badger hater on the website, Eric, joining us to break it down as Ohio State gets ready for Wisconsin. Make sure you follow Eric on Twitter, Eric at the BBC, twitter.com/EricTBBC for all the great input. Always good to have him on the show. Well, despite it being hate week, we got to show some love to a man that knows Wisconsin football. Andy Coppins, my friend, lead editor of the Madtown Badgers blog, madtownbadgers.com, as well as Bleacher Report's Big Ten blog, will join us to break down Wisconsin when we come back on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Giving back and serving first.
That's the mission of the Driven Foundation, to impact the world one life at a time, starting with Central Ohio. Founded by former Ohio State Buckeyes Roy Hall and Antonio Smith, the Driven Foundation has helped provide multiple outreach events and motivational and fitness programs to families and youth throughout Central Ohio and surrounding cities. Rooted in Columbus, Driven is an Ohio nonprofit organization of versatility, mentoring in after-school fitness programs, motivational speaking, football camps, and children's hospital patient birthday parties are just a few vehicles in which Driven impacts Ohio children. Additionally, over the last 4 years, Driven has distributed approximately 300,000 pounds of free food to more than 3,700 plus families in the great state of Ohio. To find out more about the Driven Foundation, visit drivenfoundation.org. The Driven Foundation. Live to give. Give to live. Love doing both.
We might not wear sweater vests, but there's no fooling. Now back to the best in Ohio State commentary on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour.
Welcome back to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Let's welcome in the only man that's a Wisconsin fan and that I'd call a friend, Andy Coppins with Bleacher Report as well as MadTownPadgers.com. Andy, how's it going?
Can't complain. It's Ohio State hate. Whatever you want to call it, week. We can't wait for this week because, frankly, take a look at both of our schedules. It's pretty much the only opportunity because we all know Michigan sucks.
Yeah, that's the imperative. That's the thing to take. And I saw some creative work over at MadTownBadgers.com this week. Is something about overrated or something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take a look at the numbers. Ohio State, not exactly, you know, playing a lot of competition. Now, granted, we haven't played a lot, but at least we've played one team that's ranked already.
Andy Coppins joining us here. MadTownBadgers.com. Check out his work as well at Bleacher Report. I want to touch on a little bit of Ohio State before we talk Wisconsin, because you wrote about it. Kenny Guyton and his opportunity to start. You wrote down that Kenny Guyton hasn't necessarily proved anything simply because he hasn't taken on a top defense. Now, I understand where you're coming from. You took a lot of flack for the article, but the truth is there. The proof is in the pudding. You're not saying that Kenny Guyton's not a good quarterback for his positioning. You're just saying, let's not put Kenny Guyton in the pool of top quarterbacks in the country.
Exactly. I mean, it's been just this rush to anoint Kenny Guyton as this amazing quarterback. While he's looked good, the reality is he has never faced a top-ranked defense. He's never faced a great defense. And I'm not even talking about this year. You take a look at Purdue last year. The highest they rank in any defensive category was 8th. They ranked either 10th, 11th, or worse in just about every major statistical category. Now, it's one thing to do it against really bad defenses. Doing it against a defense like Wisconsin or Michigan State or Michigan or an Iowa or somebody from out of conference that's good, you know, doing it against those style of defenses is a vastly different thing. You got to be able to prove yourself against good competition, and he just hasn't faced good competition. There's a difference between saying he's good and then saying he's good against really good competition. Braxton Miller's proven that point.
Andy Coppins joining us here, MadTownPadgers.com, as well as his work as a Big Ten editor at Bleacher Report. Andy, one thing that's missing from this rivalry, Brett Bielema. How do you feel about that?
Who? It's fun to have that. It was fun to have it while it was here. However, you know, I don't think you're going to see any Badger fan crying over spilt milk, if you will. Realistically, I think most of us in Badger Nation and most of the people that are around the program are overjoyed with how this whole situation played itself out. I mean, you know, I think Wisconsin probably ended up with the better end of the deal. That's when it's all said and done. We don't have to deal with Jen Bielema and her stupid Twitter. We don't have to deal with, you know, Brett Bielema and stupid coaching.
Enter Gary Anderson as he comes in at 3-1 overall so far in the season, 1-0 in the Big Ten. One thing that sticks out to me that you see from Coach Anderson and you see from this offense is they're spreading it out a little bit more. We've had some big plays. Not saying this wasn't a big play offense under Bielema, but
you're starting to see what Coach Anderson's offense can be and what it has been already with the running game. You've got two running backs near 500 yards, James White near that 500-yard mark, and Melvin Gordon, the best rusher so far in the Big Ten. We're starting to see under Coach Anderson what this offense can be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, realistically, Joe, if you take a look at what this offense is, pop a tape of the 2010 Wisconsin Badger football season, the 2011 Rose Bowl season, and you're going to see the exact same offense. Well, I shouldn't say that. The 2009-2010 Rose Bowl, you're going to see a very similar offense, an offense that can be explosive at times but can also pound you straight down the field. I mean, we've seen both ways to get it done with this offense, and realistically, it's all about the three-headed monster at running back. I mean, you know, Melvin Gordon is proving that he can do just about anything, and same with Corey Clement. And then you got James White, who starts the game but is really your change of pace back. So it's you know, you catch you one way, and then they're going to hit you another way. So it's going to be very intriguing to see how it plays out against this Ohio State defense, which we all know is pretty aggressive.
Joel Stave has got the start at the beginning of the season so far in the year, 60 for 95, six touchdowns, 761 yards in the air. He's got some good weapons around him. Probably, I would say, his tight end, Pedersen, might be one of the best in the country that's not talked about, if not the best in the country. And then you've got Abadaris, who's just been a Buckeye killer.
Yeah, I mean, Buckeye fans have got to be wondering when this guy's going to graduate. It seems like he's been around this program forever. But, you know, realistically, between, you know, those two, you've got the weapons to be able to stretch the defense as well. The question for Wisconsin this week is Pedersen healthy enough to be able to play in this game? If not, it might fall on a you know, an unknown name for some people in Brock DeCicco. Another guy to look for, Austin Traylor, played a lot. You know, Buckeye fans might be a little familiar with that name considering the fact that he's from Ohio. But, you know, realistically here, I think you've got to spread the field with those two. And the question for Wisconsin fans going into this game is, can Stave and Abadaris get on the same page in that long pass game? Because when it's on, it is very difficult to stop this offense, period. And when it's off, it really kills the momentum of the offense.
There's some interesting numbers when you break them down team-wise for both of these two teams as they match up at 8 p.m. Brent Musburger and the gang, ABC. It's a rivalry game. It's a huge game. And there's some numbers that match up so far through four games. The rushing offense in the Big Ten, number one Wisconsin. Right behind them is Ohio State. In scoring offense, Ohio State, the number one team, sixth for Wisconsin. But those numbers not a little bit indicative of how good the offense has been for Wisconsin. Scoring defense, Wisconsin's one, Ohio State is four. Total offense, this is the one that people don't understand. Total offense, the number one team in the conference is Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think people just have this 3 yards in a cloud of dust mentality, and they don't understand that Corey Clement, James White, and Melvin Gordon have all rushed for touchdowns of 50 yards or more this season. I mean, that's about as explosive as you can ask for. And then you add in the explosiveness in the deep pass game. As long as that's on, it's an offense that's very difficult to stop. And, you know, this isn't the first time. And like I said, the 2010 season, 2011 Rose Bowl year, you take a look at that offense, and they were scoring 41 points a game with Scott Tolzien, who was supposed to be this game-managing quarterback, and ends up being an explosive offense because they go deep in the pass game. And so it's going to be intriguing to see what happens. I keep stressing that. But for whatever reason, it doesn't matter because the national media has their narrative, and that's the only thing that matters because perception is reality, except for when reality isn't perception anymore.
One thing that you take from those total offense numbers for me that sticks out, by far the best average per play at 8 yards per play. How big is the big play in winning on Saturday for Wisconsin?
I think it's big for both teams. That, you know, we talked about this a little bit off air, but I think reality is for both of these teams, that's what they do well. Is they hit the big gainers. They compound you. They can lull you basically into sleep. And then suddenly you don't realize that it's not James White in that backfield, and boom, you don't understand the speed that's coming at you or the power that they can hit you with. And both teams can do it to each other. So it's going to be very intriguing to see what happens here. Obviously, the big gainer is what does it. But the impressive part is Wisconsin has also done it by controlling the clock, and that's the important part, too. It's not just the big gainers. It's, you know, Melvin Gordon's averaging 12 yards a carry. James White is averaging almost 9. It's just this crazy, crazy numbers that have happened. And ask Purdue what it felt like to get pounded on by Wisconsin for an entire game.
It's definitely tiring, and it takes a solid team with a lot of depth, which we know Ohio State has on defense. They will be questioned, though. They will be pushed against this tough offense and tough rushing offense. When you look at this rivalry, Andy, and we've talked about it many times before, for Ohio State fans, it's the number two team we circle. What is it for Wisconsin fans?
Well, since the division format has come about, it has to be the number one game that's circled, and I think it's only because the division is there. Without it, I think it's always going to be Minnesota. Obviously, the whole 9-year win streak has also put a little bit of a damper on that rivalry because, let's face it, in order for it to be a rivalry, you've got to have some sort of a competitiveness to it. And outside of maybe one or two of those games in that 9-game win streak, it's pretty much been Wisconsin blowing Minnesota out. So I would say you circle Ohio State first because it's the division game. It's the game that matters the most. Penn State's up there as well, but you can't win the division without beating Ohio State 99.9% of the time.
Andy Coppins joining us, MadTownBadgers.com. Check out his work as well on the Big Ten at Bleacher Report. The thing that, if you're a football fan, this is your type of game because you're going to get the big plays, you're going to get the solid runs, you're going to get everything you're looking for in a game, and you're going to get true defense, I think, on both sides when you break it down. You look at the playmakers on the defenses for both teams, and you look at linebacker. The one name that sticks out to me on both sides is Borland and Shazier. Both guys are solid linebackers. How much has Borland meant to the program at Wisconsin? Another guy that's been there for like 10 years.
Yeah, probably another guy that Ohio State wish didn't slip out from under their fingers, shall we say. I mean, think about this. Ohio State never even recruited Chris Borland.
Ugh.
and so, you know, realistically, he is the heart and soul of the Wisconsin defense, and not just because he makes plays, but it's because of his leadership, it's because of his attitude, and the things that he brings to this team in terms of experience and everything else off the field. That's even more important to what Wisconsin has built, and Chris Borland is an example of what Wisconsin is, taking sometimes those underrated guys and making them into star players. And let's face it, Chris Borland, he's been the guy that's helped in the run game. He's great against the pass. He's a very, very underrated blitzer. But he makes Wisconsin better, and he makes the players around him better because it's a number that the opposing offense has to circle every single play. It's just like Ryan Shazier for you guys. When they line up, they look for, the opposing offense looks at Shazier, finds out where he is, and figures out their play scheme from that. Same goes for Chris Borland. However, I will say this. I think the rest of that linebacking core doesn't get enough credit. If you take a look at Ethan Armstrong, Connor O'Neill, even a Derek Landish, and whether or not Brendan Kelly can play this week, that is the most loaded position on this Wisconsin defense, and it's frightening because they go at least three deep, and three deep in terms of playmakers. They've all shown that they can do it. So that I think, is going to be the key. Can Wisconsin linebackers play in space and make those one-on-one tackles in this game? If they can, it's going to be a tough sledding for Ohio State, and the same thing for Wisconsin the other way.
When you break it down, the defense for Wisconsin, you know how tough they're going to be. One of the things that you break down is depth at defensive line. There's no J.J. Watt on this squad. There's nobody that's going to take over and get 4 or 5 sacks a game. Has that possibility every time out. There's some really good players, though, and there's a couple guys that have really impressed so far this season. But when you look at the numbers, when you look at sacks, there's 5 guys tied with 1 sack on the team. That tells you a little bit about where the defense can go in the game. They can go many different ways.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing I was speaking to in terms of the depth of this defense. It's not just one player. That's the other part, too, going against the spread football team. They've got the depth to be able to, interchange parts and make it all work. And that's the important part of what they saw in terms of the differing offenses. UMass, Tennessee Tech, they both like to spread it out. They both like to do it differently. They've seen just about every style of offense you can think of coming into this week. And so that's the important part. But a guy like Bo Allen, who arguably played his best game in terms of stopping the run game, last week. Warren Herring is a guy that can get into that backfield and really cause problems for opposing quarterbacks. Then you got guys like Ethan Heber and Konrad Zagrzebski. Zagrzebski is questionable for this week. We won't know probably until Wednesday what that status will be. So it could be very intriguing. The health of the defense is going to be one of the big question marks, especially in the secondary, where there could be a starter and a nickelback that they might need to do some shuffling around with because of.
Both teams face interesting conundrums that are very similar when they're on defense, and that's stopping the run. For Wisconsin, they've got to stop it from a few different spots. Same goes for Ohio State, but they're going to see it a lot from the running back position. How do you target in, if you are Wisconsin's defense, the rushing attack of Ohio State? You must have to go about it almost any single way you would, and I think Purdue last week was a good test in terms of personnel to get ready for an Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the other part, too, is even though we kind of smoked both UMass and Tennessee Tech, they both featured quarterbacks that are similar to what the style is for Braxton Miller or Kenny Guyton. Not saying they are on the level, but it's the style. It's getting used to seeing the look. And that was the important part. For me, though, it goes back to what Wisconsin did against Braxton Miller last year. That's the game plan. Even though the defense is 3-4 instead of 4-3, it can be still the same style of game plan. You box him in, make sure he doesn't get outside to the edge, break and contain. He only had, I think, 98 yards passing and 48 yards rushing in that game. He didn't have a single touchdown except for the one. He didn't even have a single touchdown, I'm sorry. That was all Carlos Hyde in that game. So they have the blueprint, I think, in order to stop the run game. If you stop Braxton Miller, I'd rather have a guy like Carlos Hyde or a guy like Jordan Hall. I'd rather challenge those guys to beat you, because if you're stopping Braxton Miller, chances are that rush game is not nearly as effective with the other guys around them.
You mentioned it, though. Carlos Hyde was hard to stop in that overtime game for Wisconsin. Have there been runners that just are gutsy runners, up the middle runners, that have given Wisconsin problems, or have they shored that up here this year heading into this season?
We haven't really seen a lot of that. I mean, the one guy that I could point to is Marlon Grice, the running back from Arizona State. They bottled him up in terms of, he had 22 carries for 88 yards, so it wasn't like he lit the world on fire in terms of yardage and whatnot. Did have four touchdowns. They all were kind of in that 4 or 5 yard territory going towards the goal line. So I'll give them credit where credit's due. They did punch the ball in when they needed to. However, if you're looking at it from a Wisconsin perspective, I think you've seen some of that power running game and some of it in some other ways. We just really haven't faced a running back quite like Carlos Hyde in terms of his ability to be that just every down speed or, power back. We just haven't seen that yet. However, I think, you look at Bo Allen, Chris Borland, Warren Herring, they've got the guys up in the middle to be able to do it. It's a question of whether or not they can do it, and we just don't know. A
couple more questions for Andy Coppins as he joins us from MadTownBadgers.com and his work in the Big Ten at Bleacher Report. When you look at this game, the winner, it will come down to what?
I think it comes down to Wisconsin secondary, and it's not necessarily how they play against the pass. For me, it's how they play against the run. What the health issues that they're having right now really affect how they can do this, because I think ideally they would like to bring a guy like Michael Caputo or Dez Southward up into the box, because they're so athletic and they're such big hitters in space. They're guys that are sure tacklers when it comes to space, and that's really important when you're talking about going against a Dontre Wilson or you're talking about going against a Jordan Hall. Sure, Jordan Hall has shown that he can be that straightaway guy, but when he gets into space a little bit or when he gets beyond that first level, you've got to get him. You can't gang tackle him. You've got to get him right there, right then, in that one tackle. And those two guys need to be the guys that are freed up, but it can only happen if they have faith in the rest of the guys to go one-on-one. If they can't, or if they can't bottle up Braxton Miller up front, it's going to be a long day for the Badgers.
Well, we saw last year Joel Stave come in and in a quarterback situation that wasn't pretty last year for Wisconsin. Three different guys getting an opportunity to get the job and to keep the job and to step in for other guys, and a lot of drama there. Anyways, when you look at Stave, if the game's on the line, you got 2 minutes left to play, you got some field to march, is he a type of quarterback that can handle that, or haven't we seen that yet?
No, we've definitely seen it. I mean, I'll point to three things. The Tennessee Tech game, he threw a bad not necessarily a bad interception. It was a great play by the defensive linebacker. However, probably shouldn't have thrown it. But he comes back, and later on in the first half, he executes a 13-for-13, two-minute drill straight down the field at 95 yards. I mean, what more do you want from, you know, that's about as perfect as you're going to get execution-wise. And then you take a look at what happened in that Arizona State game. Not going to talk about the whole job incident that we got, but I will say this. He took that team 75 yards in the final, what was it, minute 45 or whatever was left on the clock there. He took that team into a position to get them into the field goal and win that football game. That's what you want from your quarterback. That's exactly what you want, and he's proven that time in, time out. He did it against Nebraska late in the first half against the Cornhuskers last year in Lincoln. He's done it on the road. He's done it at home. However, it's the in-between stuff that's really the worry for Wisconsin fans. He's prone to maybe one really stupid throw every game, and lately he just hasn't been in sync with Jared Abergarris. If he does get in sync and can do the in-between the two-minute stuff when it's crunch time, he seems to thrive. But it's the other stuff that really worries the Badger fans, and rightfully so.
How much of last year, the quarterback competition and drama, how much of it not there this year simply because Gary Anderson trusts Stave?
I think that's the key. I think he sees Stave as a guy who can win you a football game. That's the difference between what you saw last year with Kurt Phillips. He wasn't a guy that was going to win you that football game. He was a guy that got you into the two-minute drill, could do some nice things when the other team's playing prevent defense. He was going to give you he was going to take what the opposing offense or defense was going to give you. Joe Stave is going to be a guy that's going to be able to chuck that ball 40, 50 yards through the air and start making some plays, start stretching defenses. That's the difference between the two of them. In my view, he just needs to start doing it. It just needs to get back to where it was, even at the very beginning of the season.
He's Andy Coppins, MadTownBadgers.com, as well as his work at Bleacher Report for the Big Ten. Does a great job. Make sure you check out his work over there at Bleacher Report and MadTownBadgers.com. If you have to hit that on your keystrokes, I don't know why you would, but if you have to, that's the place to go. Andy, some predictions on the game. I'm guessing that you're thinking that Wisconsin could come out and win this ball game. I think we both would agree on whoever wins this ball game, and it's going to be close, that they have a good chance of winning the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I agree with that, because what you're talking about is the loser of this game having to have the other team lose two games. Whether it's a division game and a cross-division game, you take a look at both of their schedules, pretty light until you get to the very end of the season for both of these teams. So the realistic expectation should be that the winner has the inside track to the division title. For me, I think the key is Wisconsin's run game is so versatile. It is so varied. I just think it's different than what you see what you've seen last year, and you're talking about going up against an offensive line that is in stride. That's the key. A young defensive front for Ohio State versus a veteran and an experienced in a group that's rolling in the offensive line. I like Wisconsin's run game. I think Stave and Abergarris get some things corrected. And I think it could be somewhere 27-24. I think it's a very close football game regardless of what happens. I just don't see anybody blowing the other team out. And for those who are predicting that already, I've seen that all over the place. Ohio State 55-10, Ohio State 44-17, and all this stuff. Haven't been paying attention to just how good either set of defenses can be. It's not going to be a very high-scoring game, in my opinion.
Nope, it definitely won't. Andy Coppins joining us here, MadTownBadgers.com, and his work at Bleacher Report. Andy, where can they find your new work at Bleacher Report?
Yeah, very simple. Bookmark BleacherReport.com/Big Ten Blog. We just had our article up on the Penn State sanctions and kind of the relief that Bill O'Brien and everybody over in Happy Valley got today. And we have some interesting stuff up on passing numbers, quote-unquote, going up. And scoring, quote-unquote, going up in the Big Ten.
And he's not biased against anybody, folks. I don't know what you're thinking. Leave the guy alone.
Hey, just because I happen to be a Badger fan doesn't mean I can't set that aside and be unbiased.
He's got one of the best opinions out there, and he's good for Bleacher Report. Andy Coppins joining us here on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Good luck to you in some type of circumstance, just not on Saturday.
Same to you, and by the way, tell me how that ring tastes. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, man, have a good time.
You too. Take yep. care. Thanks for having me on.
He's Andy Coppins. The website is madtownbadgers.com, and I highly encourage you to check out his Big Ten work. He's writing about all the teams at Bleacher Report's Big Ten blog. Make sure you check out Andy's work. Great writer, great friend, and despite being a Badger fan, not too bad of a guy. Enough of the sappy stuff. We don't like Badgers. No stinking Badgers. Don't root for no Badgers. I hope the Badgers find a hole. That big hole is a deficit on Saturday that they're just not going to be able to dig themselves out of. Want to thank our great guest this week, Andy Coppins, of course, as we mentioned, of Madtown Badgers and Bleacher Report. And Eric right here at the BuckeyeBattleCry.com. Of course, make sure you follow him on Twitter, EricTBBC, and find all of his great writings on our website, TheBuckeyeBattleCry.com. It's hate week. Continue the hate. Don't let up. The Badgers drool, and the Buckeyes rule. I went there. I went first grade. Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure you find us on iTunes. And, of course, as always, go Buckeyes!
For more on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, visit iTunes or check out our media page. For more Buckeye news and notes, visit www.TheBuckeyeBattleCry.com.